Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Bava Basra Daf Tzadi Tes. We are holding on Daf Tzadi Ches Amud Beis Rabbi Chanina Nafak LeKiryasa. Four lines from the end of the page on Tzadi Ches Amud Beis. Today's show is sponsored once again by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children, Lila Nishmas, his mother, Golda Vasimcha, Aleha Shalom. Let's wish Dr. Lander and his family Ksiva Ksima Tova and a good year. And we thank them for the sponsorships throughout the entire year, as well as by Daniel Sadian for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Hatzlacha for our soldiers and our captives. They should continue to be Matzliach, and they should all come home safely and soon. And we thank Daniel also for the continued sponsorship throughout the course of the year. We should, Be'ez Hashem, he should be sponsoring in celebration of the safe return and victories of Klal Yisrael. So today what we're going to discuss is the following. We're going to talk about the measurements of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and what that teaches us, what we can learn from the measurement of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Gemara is going to talk about six questions on the Shita of Shmuel, because Shmuel holds that the Kruvim were B'nais Hayu Omdin. So the Gemara is going to say, really? How do you know it's B'nais? Six different questions on the idea that there's a Hechrich of some sort to say that the Kruvim were Omdin B'nais. Then we're going to have a series of Mishnayos, one right after the other. So Mishnah is going to talk about if I have a bar that's in somebody else's property. So when exactly, what are my rights in terms of accessing that bar? It's not in my property. So what are my rights in terms of bringing other people to access that bar? Then the following Mishnah is going to talk about, I have a garden that I have to pass through someone else's garden in order to be able to enter that garden. So what are my rights in terms of accessing that? Am I allowed to bring merchants into the garden? The path that I'm offered, that I'm given, is the guy who owns the path that I'm given allowed to plant in that path that leads to my garden? And then the last Mishnah on the daf is going to talk about when you have a derech harabim that goes through your field. So what exactly, how much space do you have to give the path that you're supposed to provide that goes through your field? So let's begin. Four lines from the end of the page on daf Tzadi Ches Amud Beis. Rabbi Chanina Nafak L'Kir Yisar. Rabbi Chanina went out to the cities. Ramalei Kraya Adadi, and the people in the cities asked him, Astira, and to Psukim Ksiv, the Pasuk can say from Lachem Aleph writes, Va'abayis Har Shabana Hamelech Shlomo Lashem Shishimama Orko Ve'esrim Rachbo Shloshimama Komaso, that the length of the Heichal from the entrance of the Heichal all the way to the east and to in the east, all the way to the end of the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the west is 60 amos. So 40 of those amos are for the Heichal, 20 amos for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The width was 20 amos, and the height was 30 amos. So it turns out that the Heichal was 40 amos by 20 amos and 30 amos high, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 amos by 20 amos and 30 amos high. So uksiv, but yet the pasuk that when it describes the actual measurements of the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself says, V'lifnei Advir, Esrim Amo Orech, V'esrim Amo Rochav, V'esrim Amo Komaso, that it's only 20 amos high. So which is it? Is the Kodesh HaKadoshim 30 amos high, or is the Kodesh HaKadoshim only 20 amos high? So Amalu, Rabbi Chanina said, not a stira. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is in fact 30 amos high. Ki kachashiv misvas kruvim milamayla. When we say that it's only 20 amos high, we're counting from the top of the kruvim, from the edge of the kruvim, all the way up. So from there up, it's only 20 amos, but from the floor to the top of the kruvim is 10 amos, so that accounts for the missing 10 amos. So says Gemara, Maika Mashmalan, why does the pasuk have to tell me the height of the Kodesh HaKadoshim from the top of the kruvim ulamayla? Why? Meaning you would never describe the height of a room that way, right? If you describe the height of these ceilings, you would never say, well, from the top of the rabbi's head and above. So you have to take off 5 feet, 8 inches, 9 inches on a good day. From the height of the room, you would of course say the height from the floor. So what's it telling us? So says Gemara, no, how come Ashmalan? What it's telling us is that Lemata, that below the head of the Kruvim, is Kilamaila, is just like above the head of the Kruvim. In that, Maila Maila in Mishamish Klum, just like above the head of the Kruvim, there was nothing there. It didn't take up, there was nothing that took up any space. It was just open air. Af Lemata in Mishamish Klum. So too, below the head of the Kruvim, even though they were standing there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they didn't actually take up any space. So just like that which is totally empty, empty, it doesn't take up space. One of the great miracles of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was that even though the Kruvim were there, they didn't take up any space. So it says, Lo Meshamish Klum, Rabbeinu Gershom points out, it doesn't mean Lo Meshamish, it means it was Meshamish L'Shechina. The Pasuk says, Dibarti Itcha Me Ala Kaporis Mi Bein Shnei HaKruvim. So it was like the most important thing. It doesn't mean that it wasn't anything. It means nothing physical that was there. But Meseyed, Rabbi Levi, this is a riot to Rabbi Levi. Dam Rabbi Levi, Vitem Rabbi Yochanan. That we have a tradition from our forefathers, that the space of the Aron and the Kruvim simply did not figure into the measurement of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was an absolute nace. Meaning, if you were to measure on one side of the Kruvim to the wall, and the other side of the Kruvim to the wall, one side of the Aron to the wall, and the other side of the Aron to the wall, you'd have 10 amos in each side. But you measure wall to wall, you also have 20 amos. So they didn't take up any space. The Marsha says, why is it that they didn't take up any space? Because that was the place for Ashras HaShechina. And so it's not a Dover Gashmi, it's a Dover Ruchani. And anything that's not a Dover Gashmi is not Tofes Makom, because Melo Chala Aretz Kavodo. So since it's something totally Ruchani, it doesn't take up any space. Ben Yoyada writes that the Aron that the Torah was placed in was not Tofes Makom in order to be Merames to us that all the expenses one has, L'tzorach Talmud Torah, does not take away from his parnasa a ki huzeh, doesn't take away from his parnasa at all, like we learn in Maseches Beitza that kol mezonos shalom k'suvin lo me'rosh hashanah, there's Adaf Yom HaKadoshim v'ad Yom HaKippurim, that all the decisions are made now, exactly how much we're going to make, chutz me'atzol Shabbos v'atzos Yom Tovim, except for what we spend on Shabbos and Yom Tov. What we spend on Shabbos and Yom Tov, that's v'atzos b'anav Talmud Torah, what we spend for educating our children, that if we spend more on that, so we'll get a bigger paycheck next month. If we spend less on that, we're going to make less money. That doesn't get counted into the cheshbon at all. So that's why the Makom Aron is Eidim and Amida, to be merames to that idea, that which is for Torah doesn't take up any space, it doesn't take up any physical room. That's the idea of the Ben Yoyada. Rav Mendel Blachman once spoke in my house to a bunch of Talmidim, and he said, what was the greatest miracle that ever happened in human history? So this one said Kriyas Yamsuf, that one said Makas Arov or something, I don't know, he had a thing with Arov, and everyone had their own ideas, and he said no, the biggest miracle is Makom Aron Einam Min Amida, because all the other miracles you could at least picture what it looks like, you would imagine a wall of water, you don't know how it happened, but you know it's amazing, but you can imagine what it looks like when the ground opens up, you would imagine what the Grand Canyon looks like, you imagine what the ground opens up for Korach looks like. What does it look like, Makom Aron? Draw a picture of Makom Aron Einam Min Amida. It's impossible. It doesn't even fit into our world. So in a certain sense, that's the greatest miracle that ever happened. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a brisa that supports this, that Aron Shasa Moshe, the Aron that Moshe Rabbeinu made, that when they put it in the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo HaMelech built in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which was 20 Amos by 20 Amos, Yesh L'Revach Hasar Amos Kol Ruach V'Ruach. There were 10 Amos on each side of the Aron, even though the entire Kodesh HaKadoshim was only 20 Amos by 20 Amos. So it's Einam Min Amida. Unbelievable. Rabbi Noah Yomer Shmuel said that Kruvim B'neis Hein Omdim, the Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech made, stood there miraculously. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says when it describes the Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech made, V'chamesh Amos Knaf HaKruv HaEchas, V'chamesh Amos Knaf HaKruv HaShenis, that each wing was 5 Amos. Eser Amos Miktsos Knafav Ve'ar Ktsos Knafav, meaning the length of each wing of each Karuv was 5 Amos, so the length of the Knafayim of two wings together is 10 Amos, and then the Pesukim described that the Kanfei HaKruvim filled up the entire space of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they touched from one wall to the other, and therefore we could ask, Kufayu Heicha V'Kaimi, where were their bodies? Meaning if their wings all together, two Kruvim, each Kruv with each wing being 5 Amos, so their wings all together were 20 Amos, where did their bodies fit? The wings come off of the side of the body. So the fact that that it fit in the Kodesh HaKadoshim at all was a miracle. El Shema Mina B'neis Ein Omdin, it must be that it was their B'neis. So the Gemara has 6 challenges to this idea. What do you mean is a B'neis? Maskva Abaya says, maybe the body of the Kruvim would protrude and went right directly under their wings, like the wings of chickens, where their the wing doesn't come off the side of the body, comes out of the top of their body, so it doesn't actually take up any space. It could be that's the way that they built the Kruvim. Why is that such a difficult thing to imagine, Abaye says. Tosfos raises the question, why does Abaye hold that if the body doesn't take up any space, then you don't need a miracle for the Kruvim to be there? We still have a klal that anything that has a certain measurement cannot fit in a space that has that same exact measurement. You need a little wiggle room in order to squeeze it in order to get it in. So even if the bodies don't take up any space, it still should have been B'nei Soyom, then Tosos asks. You need a little bit of extra space. So Tosos says that, yeah, they would have needed a nace for the wings, but Abaye was asking that you don't have to say that it was a nace on account of the bodies of the Kruvim, meaning it was a nace on account of the wings themselves. But why? That's Abaye's... sorry, someone's trying to call me. That's why the Zoom went in. So let me put on Do Not Disturb. That's what Abaye was bothered by. Why would you assume that the Kruvim, that the bodies of the Kruvim took up space? The Marsha asks, based on Tosos, that once you need a nes for the Makom Knafayim, so how does Shmuel know that the guf of the Kruvim was B'nei Soyomdin? Maybe the guf actually took up space, and the Knafayim, since they were B'nais, that accounted for the difference, right? Meaning it was they just didn't take up any space, and therefore there's plenty of room for the guf. A good kasha, the Marsha asked. In the Sefer Pnei Shlomo, he says, you know, the kasha of Tosos is Tosos l'shitasab. This goes back to the sugi we had at the end of the first parak in Yidalit and Menalit, when we're going through what fit into the Aron and how everything fit. So Tosos over there assumed that you need wiggle room in order to fit something, even if you're just going to put it in one time and leave it there forever. However, Shita Mekubetzis quotes a Rabbeinu Meir over there, who says you only need wiggle room if you're going to be taking something in and out. But if you're going to put something in and just leave it there, you could squeeze it in and it will scrape the walls a little bit, and then it would just stay there forever. You wouldn't need wiggle room for something like that. So therefore, Tosfos kasha, wouldn't be a kasha if you assume like that Rabbeinu Meir, because the Kruvim weren't brought in and out, they were just put there and they were kept there. Okay, anyway, that was challenge number one to Shmuel. Maskefla, Rava challenges Shmuel, what's the raya that the bodies of the Kruvim were? Omid b'neis v'dilma zeshlok and gedzeh havukaimi. It could be that the two Kruvim were not in one row. One was on one side of the Aron close to the western wall, and the other one was on the other side of the Aron a little bit distant from the wall, and one wing touched went beyond the wing of the other Karuv, and therefore it didn't take a nace because they overlapped a little bit. They were just off center a little bit. So and third challenge, Maskav Rachav Bar Yaakov asked on Shmuel, how do you know the goof of the Kruvim was b'neis? V'dilma ba'alach sona v'kaimi. It could be that the Kruvim were not in a straight line. Maybe they were angled so that the diagonal of the room is obviously longer than one wall to the other wall in the room. Fourth challenge, Maskav Vunabrei Rav Yeshua challenges V'dilma Beisa Me'ilai Ravach. It could be that the top of the room was wider than the bottom of the room, and that's what made space for the Kruvim. Maskav of Papa, a fifth challenge, V'dilma Mechav Avukai Yodayu. Maybe the wings of the Kruvim were not totally straight. They were bent a little bit, and therefore they didn't take up the full 20 amos, meaning they have 20 amos of length on the wing, but if it bent over, so it didn't take up the 20 amos. Maskar Avashi, the final challenge, V'dilma Shalchufei Havu Mishalchafei. It could be that part of the wings were standing one on top of the other, or one next to the other, and therefore there was extra space for their bodies, for the bodies of the Kruvim. So the Gemara explains how the Kruvim stood in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Keta Reinomdin, how were they positioned? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, Chad Amar, Pneim Ish Elachiv, that they were facing one another. Because the Pasuk says in the Chumash, Ufneim Ish Elachiv, so he didn't make up that phrase, right? Pneim Ish Elachiv is what the Pasuk describes. V'chad Amar, Pneim Labayis, and the other one says that the faces of the Kruvim were facing the Bayis, meaning were facing the Heichal that was to the east of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because the Pasuk says that in Divrei Yamim. In Divrei Yamim it says, Ufneim Labayis. Neither of them made up their shita. They're both taking from Tanakh. It's just one is a pasuk in Chumash and one is a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. So now you're going to have a problem, because if they're both psukim and they say different things, if you hold it's Pnei Mishal Achiv, what do you do with the pasuk of Pnei Labayis? So lo kasha kan bizman she yisrael osin ritzonu shel makom. They were facing one another when the Jewish people were doing ritzonu shel makom, and therefore it's a remes to the ava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael. He's showing his love for Klal Yisrael at that time. The Rashbam writes, "Dugmas chibas zachor nekeva ha'avim zelaze simin shakadosh baruch hu eves Yisrael." Just like if you have a couple that is always looking at each other, and that shows a certain sense of love, right? There's that famous psychologist John Gottman. He was able to watch how married couples interact, and he's able to predict with like 95% accuracy whether they'll be divorced in 5 years. So what does he look for? He looks for, do they look away from each other, or are they looking toward each other? Are they being, you know, those kinds of things. So that's what the Rashbam is saying, that when they look toward each other, that's a sign of chiba, that's a sign of ava, if they're looking at each other. So then he says that when they made the kruvim, they put them in such a way that they were facing Yesh HaLachiv, meaning in order that the Shechinah should be Shor B'Yisrael and Klal Yisrael should do Ritzon Shel Makom. But then once we sinned, meaning what was the miracle and what was the natural way of them to say? So they were built in a way that naturally it should be facing one another. But the pasuk that describes that Pnei Labayis is Zman She'ein Yisrael Osim Ritzon Shel Makom is when Klal Yisrael Rachman and the Son is not doing Ritzon Shel Makom, and therefore they face away from each other to symbolize a certain lack of love, a certain distance. The one that says Pnei Labayis, what does he do with the pasuk of Pnei Mishal Achiv? Now the Chora, that's not a kasha at all. Meaning, why can't he say the same thing, right? Meaning he could have said Kambos of Bizman Shalom Ritzon Shel Makom. So he says no. There's no way they would have built him. Meaning the one that says Pnei Labayis may hold that that's true, but he's saying that it was built Pnei Labayis. Why would they build it in that way? Why would they build it that naturally it would not be facing each other to symbolize a lack of avas Hashem Osanu? So answer Gemara, the mitzadei atzudei. According to this, the kruvim were always in a position where they were somewhat facing each other and somewhat facing toward the bayis, and they were just angled. They were somewhere in between. Titania unklus hager amar kruvim mais. They were made like the faces of tinokos, of young children. That's the lashon tzatzum mutzudadim p'neim, and they were off. Their faces were a little off to the side. Ketalmud aniftar mirabo, like a talmud that's leaving from his rebbe, where he doesn't turn his back to his rebbe entirely. He leans a little bit off to the side. He doesn't walk completely backwards. He'll bump into something, so he sort of angles himself away as a talmud leaves his rebbe. Like some people. When they leave the kotel or something like that, so they leave a shul, they'll leave without their not facing their back to the Aron Kodesh. I was just in Elizabeth, New Jersey last Sunday, and Rabbi Teitz Shlita got up to speak, and he kissed the parochas before he spoke, and he said the reason the speaker kisses the parochas before he speaks is to ask mechila from the Aron Kodesh, that he's got his back face to the Aron Kodesh the whole time. One doesn't easily turn their back on the Shechina. Okay, so now the Mishnah discusses, let's say I own a bar, but it's in somebody else's property. So Mishi Yishal Bar Lefnimi Beis Shal Chavero, I have a bar, but it's in your house, so when am I allowed to access my bar? So Nichnas B'Shar I can go and access the bar when it's a normal time of the day to go and access it. I can't show up at 3 a.m., nor can I leave at 3 a.m., meaning even if I came at a normal time, I'm not allowed to leave at a strange time. I can't bring my animals into your house to drink directly from the bar. I have to fill up whatever buckets of water I can from the bar and schlep it outside and then give it to my animals outside. Vize oslo posachas, vize oslo posachas. And both the Baal HaBor and the Baal HaBayis are allowed to put a lock and key on the bar. That the Baal HaBayis could put a lock and key on it so that the Baal HaBor doesn't feel like you just come whenever he wants. No, I'm not letting you come into my house, even though you own this bar, unless I'm accompanying you. I trust it's your bar, so that's not my bar. But I don't trust you with my silver and with everything else that's in my house, so I could put a lock on it. Very similar to what we do with Mechiras Chametz. We always tell the Nachri that we're selling Chametz to, that look, it's your Chametz, so you have the right to access it. but with reasonable notice. You have to call us a letter. You can't just show up to someone's house. So without accompaniment, we don't trust you with our silver necessarily. We don't trust you. You'll come and you'll get your Cheerios. You'll come and you'll get your scotch, whatever. But it's a reasonable thing that they each have a lock on it. The Balabar puts a lock on it, so the Balabayas doesn't take it because it's not the Balabayas' bar. So says Gemara Pasachas Lahecha. Where was there a need for a lock? So Rabbi Yochanan Shneim Labar. Both of the locks, the Balabayas and the Balabar, were for locking up the bar. So Bishlam Balabar Bailishta Muri Mai Debare. I understand that the Balabar needs to protect the water of his bar. He doesn't want the Balabayas taking it. El Balabayas Lamale. Why does the Balabayas require a lock? So Rabbi Blaza, the Gemara answers Mishum Chashad Ishto. That people who see the Balabar going into the house of the Balabayas at all times, even when he's not home, they're going to be motzi laz on his wife, that there's a strange guy walking into his house when the husband's not home. So they were misaking that the Balabayas also puts a lock on the bar, so the Balabar has no reason to ever go there when the Balabayas is not around. That the Ritva explains that way, and then the Ritva adds that they should be careful to be Makayim Lepasuk V'yisim Nikiyim Me Hashem Umi Yisrael, that a person not only has to be Nikiyim Me Hashem to make sure that Kodesh Baruch Hu shouldn't have any tainas on you, you should also be Nikiyim Me Yisrael. You should make sure that to behave in such a way where other people won't have any tainas on you. The Meiri writes that the Balabayas shouldn't be choshed his wife. So not that other people from the outside shouldn't be choshed, shouldn't be motzilaz, but that the Balabayas himself shouldn't start getting jealous and be choshed his wife. So according to these Rishonim, this takana was that the Balabar shouldn't come in when the Balabayas is not there. It was to take away la'az and chashad, right? But not that they were choshesh that the Balabar is actually going to do an avera with the wife of the Balabayas. But there are others that suggest that they were actually choshesh. This is asking for trouble. Sending a guy into a house on a consistent basis when the husband's not around is just asking for trouble. That's the way the Rambam seems to understand, and others seem to understand as well. Okay, now says the next Mishnah. If I have a garden that's behind your garden, and the only way for me to access my garden is by going through your garden, so I can only go through your garden to access my garden at normal hours, not at strange hours. I also can't bring merchants through your garden to my garden to say, okay, here's my produce, do you want to sell it or whatever, and do a business deal with that. I also can't use your garden to access other fields that I have other access points to. It's only my garden that I don't have any other access point to, so that's when I'm allowed to go through your garden. And the guy who owns the outer garden can actually plant the pathway that he provides for the other person, even though it will be a little annoying to walk through a path that's planted, because we know that even though he's giving reshus for him to walk through his garden, but he doesn't mean to be mevater on on any of his space to be able to maximize the space that he has. Nasnulo derech minatzad. However, if Beis Din gives the guy on the inside, that's the idea that Beis Din is Rashbam, and Rabbeinu Gershom said that it's talking about Beis Din. If Beis Din gives the guy on the inside a passageway, minatzad midas shnehen, that they both agree that he's going to have on the side of the other guy's garden, and they both agree to it, so you're not going to be able to cause any nezek when you're walking through the guy's outer garden. So the Balabayas is probably then much more mevater. If the path is not right in the middle of his garden, it's more on the side, the Baal Hagina Hachitzona is probably much more mevater, and therefore Nichnas B'Shashu Rotza V'Yotzi B'Shashu Rotza, and therefore you can come in any time of the day or night. It's up to you, because you're not walking right through the middle of his property. Machnas L'Tocha Tagar, and you want to bring merchants in there, you can do that. Lo Yikonis Mitoch L'Toch Stei Acheres, but you're still not allowed to use it as a pathway to get to other other fields. The Ritva writes that Yesh Gorsim V'Nichnas Mitoch. That of course you can, meaning that if you can use it any time of day or night, and you can bring other people in it, why shouldn't you be able to access it for other fields? So it seems that there are two gersos over here that make a huge difference. And neither party, neither the Balagina Chitona nor the Balagina Pnimis, is allowed to plant that pathway, because it's meant for halicha, it's meant for walking, it's not, and therefore planting there is going to be mafri. Kriya, the ability to walk through that area. Rabbi Yonah adds that the Zra'im are ma'akiv da'alicha, because sometimes it's mafriya him to walk quickly, and sometimes he doesn't want to step on them, and neither of them has the right to be to be ma'akiv the derech of the other party. Okay, so now the Gemara says, similar to our Mishnah about the rights and obligations of passing through someone else's garden, what are the rights and obligations when you buy an area, when you buy a place in someone else's field to dig there? So I'm Rabbi Yom Shmuel. I'm a Beis HaShlachin. Someone says to his friend, a field that needs watering, and it's the rainwater is not sufficient, Ani Mochalach. That's what I intend to sell to you, a place in my field to dig over there so that you'll have water to provide from the river to the field, that you'll be able to water the field. So Nosan L'Shtei Amos L'Tocha. The Mocher has to leave space, 2 amos of space, in order for him to dig, because that's the amount, that's the width of the body of water that you would normally have on a field that needs irrigation. And aside from that, he needs another amma on each side so that if the walls that are around it start crumbling, you'll be able to fix them with the offer that you'll take from those amos. Amma Beis HaKilon, if he says a place to dig an area where you can get water to feed your behemos and to wash clothing and wash kelim ani mochalach, nosino amma achas l'tocha. Then you only have to provide 1 amma because that needs a smaller body of water. V'chatzi amma mikan v'chatzi amma mikan la'agpeh, and chatzi amma on each side. V'osin akpayim mizoram, who has the right to plant on those extra amas on each side? Rabbi Yehuda amar Shmuel. Well, Balasada Zoram, that the owner of the field gets to plant that. Rav Nachman Rav Shmuel, Balasada Notam, that the Zuchus of the Mocher, the Balasada, but he could be Notei Ilanos, he cannot be Zorea Zraim, that he could only be Notei Ilanos. So, we'll see what's what. Madiam Zoram, Kolshke Notam. If you're only allowed to plant Zraim, then for sure you're allowed to plant trees. Well, Madiam Notam, but if you hold that you're only allowed to plant trees, because that doesn't ruin it as much, Aval Zoram Lo, you're not allowed to plant Zra'im over there, because Chalchule Mechalchule, the Zra'im spread a little bit in different directions, and it creates holes in the ground and therefore weakens the ground and will weaken the walls around that area. So another Maimon now the Gemara says about the rights of someone who buys an Amas HaMayim in someone else's property. If a person has an Amas HaMayim that goes through someone else's field toward his own field, and the walls had fallen in, so there's not enough dirt in the space around it, of the 2 amos around it, to fix the edges of this waterway, of this passageway of water, misakname osasada. The owner of that waterway is allowed to take dirt from another part of the field that belongs to the balabais in order to fix the walls of this passageway of water, of this aqueduct. Biyodua shelo kalu agafeha, because elaba osasada, because we know that the dirt is not going to spread out, and therefore he's allowed to take from the dirt from that place. Why can't the balasada tell the guy who owns this aqueduct, your water that's in the aqueduct is what caused the dirt to fall away, and therefore there's not enough dirt? It wasn't my field that caused the dirt to go away, it was your water that caused the dirt to go away, so why are you allowed to take my dirt? Elam Rav Papa, Shalmanaskin Kibalov Balasada. This is always understood to be the arrangement between them. You allow me to have an aqueduct that goes through your field. It means that you allow me the right to fix it if I need to fix it as well. Okay, so says the Mishnah now. Mishaya Derech HaRabim Overes L'toch Sadeu. If a person has a passageway of the Rabim that goes right through his field, so Nitala, if he takes the Derech for himself, he plows in that area, Menosla Menatzad, and then he decides, you know what, I'd rather have the space where this derech is going right through my field. I'm not gonna rob from the public. The public will still have a space. I'll give them a space. Minatzad, I'll give them a space off to the side. So I'm going to give them a different area to walk through. So Masha Nasa Nasan, that different area that he gave them to walk through, they are in fact entitled to, and the Rabbim can walk through that area. Vishalo lo higio. But the part that he tried to seize for himself, that he has no rights to. That still belongs to the Rabbim, even though his whole point of giving them the other space was so that they wouldn't walk through the old space anymore. Derech Hayachid, how big of a space is a Derech Hayachid? Arba Amos. It's the width of 4 Amos, which is about the size that a wagon needs to be able to pass through. So if you sell another individual a Derech in your field so that he can pass through to get to his field, you're supposed to give him 4 Amos of width. Derech HaRabim, 16 Amos. But if you're giving a Derech HaRabim, then it's going to be 16 Amos. So if you're selling a Derech for Rabim to be able to pass through, then you have to give a derech that's 16 amos. In Masechus Shabbos and Daf Tzadites, we say that the width of a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is 16 amos, and we derive that from the agalos in the Midbar that they would travel two side by side with a little bit of space between them, and the rochav was 16 amos. So that's what the Rashbam points out over here, that we learn from there the dimensions of a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, that the dimensions of a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim has to be 16 amos. There may be other requirements of a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, right? That's why throughout halacha, many poskim always assume, Mishra Brura among them, that we don't really have a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim midaraisa b'zman hazeh, because it could be like the many, many Rishonim that say that in order for something to be a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, you need Shishim Ribo people in it every single day. So there aren't that many spaces where Shishim Ribo people are every single day. So we almost never have a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim midaraisa according to that very large group of Rishonim. Derech HaMelech in Lashir. The space that a Melech has for a Derech, he could be Poritz Geder and make Drachim however he wants, and there's no Shir. Lechora, that has nothing to do with our Mishnah, right? That's a Masech Sanhedrin din, right? Meaning over here we're talking about, when I'm selling somebody something, how much do I have to give him? I'm not selling anything to the king. The king comes and he looks at my property and he says, I'll take it, and that's it. I can't do anything about that. So it's not like how much I have to provide the king. So it's really got nothing to do. So the Rashbam on tomorrow's daf is going to write that it's brought Derech Agav, that since the Mishnah is talking about the width of Derachim, so it mentions the Derech HaMelech as well. The Rashbam writes that the makor of this din is a Sifri. Now, in the pasuk it says that a melech should carry a sefer Torah wherever he goes, so that he could have yiras Hashem and always focus on the mitzvah satorah. So the Sufri says that's when it comes to shmiras mitzvahs, the melech is like everybody else. But whenever it comes to melucha, he's different than everybody else. Meaning, as far as how he relates to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that he's just like everybody else. Meaning there are different like echelons of society, but we're so distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it doesn't make a difference as far as how he relates to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he has the same shmiras and mitzvahs, same everything. I heard Rabbi Reisman just saying that the phrase Melech Malchei Hamalachim always bothered him. That Hashem is like the king of kings. Oh, really? He's bigger than Biden? I mean, like, come on. Like, what is that? How does that even... So he said, Rav Schwab explains that that we're talking about the Malchus Hashem, Erev Hashem. So Rav Schwab explains that Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem. Melech Malchei Hamalachim means they're his puppets. It doesn't mean that he's greater than, or he's the best king among all the kings. It means that there is the Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem. Every decision that they make is completely Biyad Hashem. Rav Shacht always reminds us in election season that you do your Ishtadlus, you vote, but remember that they lose their Bechir Chavshus the day they go into office. They don't have Bechir Chavshus anymore. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that is controlling everything. All of their decisions at that point. But anyway, so the Derech HaMelech is Ein Lashir, and that's based on the Sifri, that when it comes to Dvarim Shel Malchus, so then that which relates to the Melucha, so he could be Poritz Derech and Ein Mochem Biyado, as opposed to a Hedyot. So the Rashbam asks, how could they learn this from this Pasuk? And he says the Limud is from the Pasuk afterwards. It says, Levilti Rom Levavo Me'achiv, that the Melech has to feel himself to be equal with his brothers. So that's what the Sifri says. Yeah, when it comes to mitzvos, he's no different than everybody else. But he has to still act as a Melech. And he says, says we find a similar thing by the Kohen Gadol. By Kohen Gadol it says Vahakohen Hagadol Me'achiv, and Chazal Darshan Masech Sorios Gadol Mishalechav, that we should do things that he shouldn't be Gadol, that will make him Gadol from all the other Kohanim. The Rambam writes this in Klei HaMikdash, that if he doesn't have any money, then the other Kohanim have to give him money Lufi Yashro until he's the richest of all of them. That's the din of the Kohen Gadol, that they have to do whatever they can to elevate him. So Klape the others, he's elevated. Klape HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's not elevated. Everybody is the same. Okay, so that's Derech HaMelech. Derech HaKever, if a person sells a passageway through his field in order that they should be able to have Levayos that goes through his field, so Ein Lashir. There's no shear for the width of space you have to give. The people who are carrying the mita and the malavim don't need to confine themselves to four amos. And that they did that as a takanas chachamim for the covenant of the mace. That we're going to see also in tomorrow's daf. That's a takanas chacham, because sometimes it could be a lot of people when it comes to a levaya. It depends, you know. The Gemara says in the second paragraph of Ksubas that if someone was learned Torah during his lifetime, so you should keep, everyone should go to the levaya until there are 600,000 people there. So that's a lot of people. And if he was malami Torah also, then ain lo shir. So it could be a lot of people. They shouldn't all have to fit in a four-am passageway. Hamamad, the maimed is after the funeral. They would do ma'amados. They would pause and stop and stand in place seven different times. Da'eni tziporu amru, base arba as kavid. That if you're selling an area where they can conduct a maimed, you're supposed to give an area where that's large enough that you could plant four kav of tavua in that area. Okay, maybe we'll stop there. And Bezusham, tomorrow we'll pick up at the Gemara on the bottom of Tzadi Tesson Beis. Everyone have a great day. Good. Goodbye.